Hi, this is Eric Lors, and you're listening to the Guru Selling System radio show. Now, presentations. I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and they're like, you know what we need? We need to create a killer presentation. Or I meet with companies and sales teams and they say, here's our killer presentation. How often does it work? About 42% of the time. Like, and that's a killer presentation. And of that, we'll get about a 10% closing ratio. Yay! So sales presentations, obviously they're part and parcel of, they're the expected, they're an expected part and parcel of how sales tends to normally be done. And there's always this search for, you know, what is the killer sales presentation? How do I design something that I can use over and over again, blah, 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 and all this other stuff. Now, sales presentations, doing presentations effectively, getting people interested, utilizing that time, this is all, it can make or break, I shouldn't even say it could, it does. It either makes or breaks whether or not you're going to progress in a sales process when you get to that quote-unquote presentation time. But there are a lot of issues that go in, a lot of pieces and a lot of issues that go into presenting, and in order to really address that, because I wanted to go outside, you know, my own expertise on this and get somebody else's opinion, and that's why I asked my buddy Tom Abbott to come on the show. We're going to be talking about sales presentations. We'll get to that interview in a minute, and Tom had some very interesting insights, which I definitely recommend you stick around to the end of the interview, because he took the entire construct of sales presentations in a completely different direction, so you're really going to like that interview. Now, before we get to the interview, as always, if you haven't already, what I would recommend is that you go on over to our website, which is guruselling.com, that's guruselling.com, and you can find there plenty of places to download the free report, The Secrets of the Guru Selling System. Now, the reason I recommend this is because in this show and in every show, I will mention various pieces of the Guru Selling System, and it just helps for you to know what I'm talking about. And it makes it easier if you have a report, because you'll have some idea. Now, if you really want to understand the Guru Selling System, then go on over to bedosale.com. That's bedosale.com. And there you can pick up the first three chapters of the book, Be Do Sale, which is the book all about the Guru Selling System. And you can also order the digital version right there, or you can hit the button and it'll take you on over to Amazon, where you can get yourself a actual physical copy of the book. And again, if you do that, if you really want to understand the Guru Selling System, how to apply it, how to utilize it, and how to start working it today in with how you do sales for yourself or your team or your organization. Anyway, without further ado, let's get to our interview with Tom Abbott.
Okay, and today our guest is Tom Abbott. Now, Tom is the author of the new book, The Soho Solution, 21 Selling Strategies for Growing Your Small Business. He is also the founder and director of Soho Sales Coaching, and for more than 10 years he has worked with companies worldwide to help them increase their sales. In addition to his writing, training, and coaching, Tom is a regular contributor of sales articles to the Business Times newspaper, the Straits Times newspaper, and the Singapore Marketer magazine. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hello, Eric. Thanks for having me.
And hello to you, and thanks for being here. Now,
well, it's my pleasure. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, we are glad to have you. Glad to have you, especially because we're going to be talking about the all-powerful presentation. Now, presentations, they are I have a whole opinion of presentations, but they have been drilled into people's heads as, you know, it's part and parcel, and it has to be done, and da-da-da, and all that other kind of stuff. And I believe, yeah, there's a time and a place for these kind of things. The question that I have for you, though, is with presentations, what causes so many salespeople to, forgive my French, suck at delivering a good presentation?
Well, that, Eric, is probably one of the million-dollar questions. And I think one of the challenges that sales professionals make when it comes to actually delivering effective presentations is they haven't actually taken the time to come up with a plan around the presentation, and they tend to just ad-lib. So do you want me to dig a little bit deeper there?
Yeah, please. Ad-lib away.
Yeah. So in the same way that, you know, we talk about how important it is to have, you know, carefully crafted and written scripts to help you schedule appointments with prospective customers, I think it's equally, if not more important, for us to actually have a script or what I would refer to as a presentation sequence plan for delivering your presentations. Because otherwise, what I notice is people tend to leave too much to chance, and then they end up losing control of the presentation. So it's really critical to actually lay out some of the critical components of your presentation plan and actually follow that.
Okay. So, and certainly, yeah, you want to know where you're going with the presentation. How do we, though, don't we run the risk of becoming, let me put it in perspective. I can't stand the phone script. So, you know, don't we run the risk of becoming very mechanized and almost inhuman by creating a script or are we talking about a real script, or are we just talking more about sort of a format in your mind there?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Eric. So let me answer that question, if I can, with another question. Is it that you hate the script or how that script is being delivered?
Well, yeah, the people who have come to depend on the script and basically think that the words are the most important thing. That's what I always have an issue with, the quote-unquote killer script.
You know, to me, Eric, you know, we talk about, you know, presentation plans and scripts and whatnot. At the end of the day, you know, when I was just meeting with a client yesterday and we were talking about this, and I said, the thing is this, a script or a system or a process at the end of the day is only as effective as the actual person who's using it, doing it, and referring to it. So you could have a so-called killer script, as you say, but the person who's delivering that, if they're not killing it, it's not working. So that person needs to not read the script, because one of my pet peeves is when I pick up the phone and I can hear someone, "Hello, Mr. Abbott, how are you? That's wonderful. Now, I would like to introduce," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're not even paying attention to my responses, you know, verbal or nonverbal or anything like that. They're just reading through a script. To me, that's the biggest no-no. So I advocate the use of scripts, either in prospecting calls or in presentations, but not reading from them. They should be a guide, a template, a tool that you can refer to, something that I think sales professionals need to know, understand the sequence and the flow of a call, understand the flow and the sequence of a meeting, refer to it, know it, remember it, but by all means, don't read it.
So know your purpose, but don't memorize your prose.
And not read it. That's the key. You know, when you're watching a film, you know, we were just watching The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock just a couple nights ago. It was being shown on HBO. And we're watching this, and it was just a really great movie. And what makes a great movie is that you actually can identify with the characters, and it seems genuine. I mean, is Sandra Bullock really, you know, a mother of two who adopted, you know, a football player and took him from the projects? Of course not. But you feel like that's her character. You feel like that's who she is. Because she's not just reading the script, she's actually living the script and feeling it. And then you feel that. So that transfers to you as a viewer. That's what we need to do as sales professionals with scripts, is not read the script, but live it and feel it and breathe it, and your customers are going to feel that too.
Okay. So with the script, with the going a little bit deeper, there has to be that true passion for what you're selling and what you're doing, and compassion for the folks that you're presenting to, so that it's no longer about a script or a set of bullets or anything else like that. This becomes part of just your natural communication.
Exactly. It needs to become part of the natural communication. But the reason why we come up with a script, to be honest with you, is not for us to, and when I say script, I'd rather use language of a presentation sequence plan. because many of us associate the word script with, you know, just an opportunity for you to rattle off all the features and benefits of your product, you know, who you are, how great you are, etc. That's not really the purpose of this. It's really about focusing on the customer and what's important to them. So that's what we would put into the presentation sequence plan. Do you want me, Eric, to share for a moment some of the important components of this plan?
Please.
So the first thing that I think we need to include in the presentation sequence plan is to give some thought in advance as to what are some of the benefits that you have planned for this presentation or demonstration. So for example, what are some of the things that you want to highlight for them that are really going to resonate with them? So for example, in my work with sales professionals, I know that one of the things that gives them the greatest gratification is when they can build relationships with prospects. That's probably the number one or number two thing that I hear from sales professionals. They go, Tom, one of my biggest challenges is I don't know how to connect and build rapport with prospects. So that then becomes one of the benefits that I'm going to share with them in the presentation, how I can help them do that. So you need to think in advance, what are the benefits that you're planning for the presentation? You also need to plan out what are some of the benefits and highlights that you want to demonstrate. And I'll talk about demonstration tools in a moment. You need to anticipate what's their primary objection. Anticipate it, think about it, write it down, and what's your response to that objection? What are some similar situation stories that you're going to share with them? And what physical involvement do you plan on creating in this presentation? Because we know that when prospects are actually physically engaged in this demonstration, actively participating in it, they're touching it, they're feeling it, they're tasting it, whatever, they're more likely to say yes, respond positively, and buy. So again, you actually need to think about, you know, the psychology of this, the components that actually make a winning presentation, what needs to be included in that plan, and then plan it out and then deliver it. Otherwise, as I said before, you leave too much to chance and you let your prospect actually dictate the flow of this meeting. And that's a no-no if you want to close sales.
What about handling objections? Can you go a little bit deeper into that?
Yeah, you know, something that I've noticed is this. When people ask me for advice around handling objections, I usually turn it around and say, well, what are the most common objections that you face? And it usually takes people a moment. You know, they pause for a moment and they think about it. And they go, well, I'm not sure. All of them. And I say, okay, well, if you were sure, what would the top one be? And then that sort of helps prompt them a little bit and say, you know what? Price. People are always rolling their eyes or, you know, gritting their teeth when I quote them the price. And they always say, you know, why is it so much, right? So I say, great. The first thing you need to do is to anticipate what are the most common objections that you face, the primary ones. And then once you've anticipated that, so for example, if we look at a price objection, then you need to start planning out, well, what's your response to that? How are you going to consistently and effectively defend your price or respond to that? How are you going to clarify their objection? So for example, I've noticed that price objections tend to come in two forms. It's either we can't afford that. So that's a genuine, honest objection or concern about affordability. So that's budget. The other price objection is around value. Oh, we can afford that. We just don't think what you're offering at that price is worth it. So we're not seeing the value. So what's important for sales professionals to do is, number one, anticipate the objection, clarify the objection so that they're crystal clear as to what are they really concerned about as it relates to price, for example. Is it affordability or is it value? And then what's your response to that? If, for example, if it's around affordability, perhaps you might want to respond by saying, well, you might be happy to know that you can actually pay this off in monthly installments, or you might be thrilled to know that we accept credit card, or how about PayPal, et cetera, et cetera, or all we need is a 30% deposit and the rest in 3 months, or whatever. But that's how you could handle an affordability objection. Now, if it's around value, then we need to start asking them, well, what do they really need this to do more of? Or what would make this more valuable? Or perhaps we could throw in some additional support or some follow-up or a guarantee or a buyback or a trade-in or whatever. But what can we throw in to sweeten the pot that would make this more valuable, that won't force you as a sales professional to make concessions on price? Does that help, Eric?
Yeah. No, that's a great example. And the price objection usually is one of the primary objections out there. Now, what about so if they keep coming up with the same objection, let's say there's got to be a point at which you say, you know, I've done 10 presentations. And after all 10 presentations, I got the same objection, which was about value. I'm presuming that at some point you say, okay, you have to start kind of looking at the presentation and saying, maybe I should handle that objection in the presentation.
Right. So perhaps looking at a way to, you know, how do I actually address this or counter this or deflect it earlier on? Is that right?
Right. How do we go about, I guess, analyzing our outcomes so that we can, you know, go back and retrofit the presentation?
Yes. So something that I find useful is this, and this is what I love about really effective sales professionals. These are ones that are curious, which is one of my mantras in sales training: be curious, and the other is to be courageous. But being curious is around, okay, I'm noticing, as you say, Eric, that out of 10 presentations that I deliver, 9 of them are objecting or questioning around price. So how can I address that perhaps earlier on by making sure that I'm demonstrating the value throughout the presentation? I mean, let's be clear. To me, you know, the close, if you've done an effective presentation and demonstration, the sale will just happen as long as you're there. You know, as long as you're there to take the order and take it to the next step, it's going to happen. If you've addressed all the key things, you're clear about what their goals are, what they're looking for, and you've actually demonstrated to them how your solution can help them, it's going to happen. So definitely my advice for any sales professional that's hit with the same objection time and time again, and it seems to be slowing down the close or the sales process here, is find a way to address that in the presentation. Now, I want to caution. Sometimes, though, sales reps make the mistake of actually raising the objection very overtly in the sales pitch, and they actually draw attention to something unnecessarily. So they might make the mistake. It's sort of a rookie move to say, okay, look, now we're really expensive, right? Or you might have some concerns about price. We're overpriced, but let me tell you this, blah, blah, blah. Well, now what they're focusing on is the fact that you're overpriced and not on the value. So if you have to be really careful. I mean, it is walking on a tightrope here. So what I would encourage that sales professionals do, especially novice ones who really haven't addressed this issue effectively, is to be aware of this issue, the price objection, and find ways to use what are known as similar situation stories in their presentation, where they can share a similar situation of a client that they've worked with that once felt that way. They had a price objection, or they were concerned about the price. Can we afford this? But then they found that this actually offered the best value for money, decided to give us a try, and now they're finding X or Y. They're happy, they're achieving the results that they're looking for, etc. So I find that the use of similar situation stories is a great way to counter an objection like price and all other kinds of objections.
Okay. What about what I see is probably the biggest objection of all, which is looking at their feet, looking at their BlackBerry, falling asleep, staring out the window, looking at their watch. How do we keep during presentations? Because I came out of the old days when everybody went running for their PowerPoint. I should say the old days. That's what everybody still does, unfortunately. And what I've told people is, you know, you turn off the lights in a room, you turn on a projector at the front of the room, and somehow you're back in fifth grade history. You know, and they're about to show you the film about the Pilgrims, or you're from Canada, so I guess, you know, whatever, whoever discovered the French, I guess, or the English coming to Canada, and you start going back into that mode of, I'm going to go to sleep now. So in a corporate environment, what tactics do you use to keep everybody not only awake, but engaged and learning from the experience of the presentation to move them along in the sales process?
Well, Eric, I mean, I think that's really critical. And to me, it gets back to this. You know, when we use the word presentation, I'd rather replace the word presentation with conversation. This really shouldn't be a presentation at all. It should really be a conversation about what are the greatest challenges your prospective customer are facing? What are their greatest challenges? What the heck is keeping them awake at night? Why are they losing sleep? Turn it around and say, well, I mean, I could talk all day about how great we are and what we can do, but Joe Prospect or Jane Prospect, maybe you can share with me, why did you invite me here today? How do you feel that I can help you? What are your biggest challenges? If we were to work together and we were to look back a year later, how would you know that this was a brilliant success? So really turn it around and engage them. Why are we even here? Why did you call me here today? How do you see me helping you? It should be less about presenting and showing and demonstrating and more about engaging and asking questions. I think asking powerful questions, having that curiosity, is probably the most effective way that you can deliver a so-called presentation. Be curious, ask your prospect lots of questions, ask them intelligent questions that show them that you actually understand their business. So for example, if a company asks me to come in to talk about how I can train their team and they say, so Tom, what can you do? What's so great about Soho Sales Coaching and what you can offer? I say, well, first of all, what have you tried before? How long have you had this problem? What are some of the goals that you have? What's worked in some other training you've done? What hasn't worked? How important is it to you that you actually solve this problem? When do you need this problem solved? How much is this problem costing you over time? What are your sales targets for 2012? What's going to happen to you in your role as a sales manager if you don't hit target? Ask them engaging questions. How the heck can you fall asleep when someone's asking you a question like that? So engage them in conversation. And then when you respond, then you can demonstrate a little bit how you've helped companies like them to achieve those goals. But at the end of the day, I think it should be less about presenting and more about asking questions.
So you would then recommend, so if a company came to you and said, we want to come up with a stock 45-minute, I don't know, 45 to 60-slide PowerPoint killer presentation that we can regurgitate to any client that comes to see us, or that we go to see, rather, you would say that you're not going to help them create that presentation. Instead, you're going to – you help them create, from what you're saying, more of an integrated conversation, maybe with some pictures or slides or something as sort of a, you know, when it comes up, we can refer to this picture, et cetera.
Definitely something that's visual, that's something that's stimulating, that captures and keeps their interest. You know, absolutely, Eric. Certainly something that's going to ask questions. I mean, I'm in favor of, you know, and we're just assuming that you need to use a PowerPoint, but you don't always need to use a PowerPoint. Sometimes there's nothing more powerful than actually just sitting down and having a conversation with someone. And based on the types of questions that you're asking them, you are demonstrating to them your expertise in a subject area. Maybe hand them a pen and paper and ask them to jot down a few things. That's part of the physical involvement that I talked about earlier on. You can actually just hand someone a sheet of paper and a pen and say, you know, can you just write down what your sales target is right now at 2012? And then they write it down. And you say, great. So that's your target for 2012. What's your actual year to date? And then they write that number down. And then you say, so what's the difference between those two numbers? Boom, they write down that number. You say, great. Now, your investment in me helping you achieve that number is only about 1 or 2 or 5% of that number. And then they write that down. So visually they can see. So that's also one way that you can handle a price objection, right? So you're using that physical involvement where they're actually doing that calculation. They get engaged in it. So I'm just a fan, Eric, of actually just getting your audience to participate. So even when I'm doing keynotes, I don't stand up there and just talk and refer to my PowerPoint. That's just a supporting tool that's just there for candy and emphasis. But they really need to focus on you and the relationship that you're building together. And to me, it should be conversational. Whether I'm sitting one-on-one or a keynote with 1,000 people, this needs to be a conversation. It needs to be about them, not me. Otherwise, they could care less.
Okay, so... Well, and I totally agree with you on this. What you're saying then, make sure I've got you correct, because I certainly wouldn't want to misrepresent you. You're basically saying not really a presentation, but you train more of just communication conversations, and presentation. The stock idea of a presentation is you eliminate.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, Eric, it's really around, you know, what tools are going to help this prospective customer say yes and move forward and engage your services. I mean, that's sort of a long-winded way of saying it. We've used words like presentation or pitch or whatever because it's just easy. We use language like, how do you close sales, as though you're closing something? You're not. You're actually opening up and starting the relationship with a customer, because now you actually have to fulfill and deliver. So these are just kind of, you know, words that we use that have stuck over time, closes and presentations and pitches and whatnot. So at the end of the day, sure, yes, that's what we're doing. But there's all kinds of tools that we can use, whether it's, you know, PowerPoint or Keynote in my case, I'm in the Mac environment. You know, brochures, flip charts, binders, laptops, whatever material that you use to help engage your prospect in that conversation and demonstrate to them that you're an expert. At the end of the day, you just need to demonstrate that you are someone that can help solve their problems.
So demonstration over presentation.
Yes, demonstration needs to be a critical component of the presentation. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, I was actually attending one of these, home expos, right, where they've got all of these different, you know, products for house and home. So here I am, and I can see that there's this one woman. She's got the, you know, the headset on, and she's doing her pitch, and she's talking about, you know, this wonderful product, and it ends up being this type of broom. Now, this broom is not just a usual broom that we've all got. This broom has a rubber base with bristles at the bottom that somehow runs on electromagnetic energy. And it just attracts things to it. You can use this broom on a rug, on a hard surface, whatever. She's putting dog hair on the floor. She's dropping sand and dirt on the ground. She's putting cornflakes on the ground and then stepping on it and crunching it into the ground. And I looked at her and said, you're not going to get that out. So she engaged me with the depth of the problem, right? I was like, there's no way she's going to get this out. And I've got this feeling of anticipation. How the heck is she going to do it, right? It's like watching, you know, Chris Angel on TV and one of these magic tricks, right? She gets the broom and just scoops it all up, bang, puts it in the dustbin, gone. Eric, I bought two. So that's the power of an effective demonstration, right? You define the problem, you put it right in front of the prospect, and then you demonstrate to them how this works. It's just like the old school commercials on TV with the dish detergent, where they put all this junk inside the sink, it's like murky water, and then they put a little bit of this dish detergent in, and then they dip the dish, pull it out, and voila, it's clean. That's a demonstration. The only thing that would have made that more effective would be if she handed me the broom and had me clean it. I would have bought four. So she almost had it down pat. But the demonstration is what's known as a proof device, because it proves that your product or service works. If I, as a sales professional, just tell you how great I am, well, that's what I'm supposed to do, right? I mean, that's my job. No one believes sales professionals anymore. But if you can use a proof device, like a demonstration, and actually hand it to your prospect and have them solve the problem with your product, sold.
So you got to get down, and it's interesting. And for anybody listening, this is actually the first time Tom and I have ever talked, believe it or not. It's interesting because I hear a lot of the things you're saying, and I'm like, geez, I'm wondering if you read my book. with the with the clientele, how do you look? Because you know, from a corporate standpoint, if you've got a longer issue or bigger issue, then you know, the broom, I understand. And there are a lot of ways, obviously, that you can do the demonstration piece. I think, though, that the biggest issue in demonstration, being able to effectively demonstrate, is getting down to an actual real problem. Because what I'd say to people is, I say people's biggest problem is they don't know what their biggest problem is. So first you've got to get them down to that biggest problem. How can we use presentations or a demonstration or something like that to help a client get to their biggest issue? Because as you know, if they have a sort of general problem in mind, they're not specific on it, then they don't know exactly how to act, and they'll sit on their thumb for 6 months until they finally decide that something else is more important and they go pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm. You know, my feeling, Eric, is this. At the end of the day, if you're asking the right questions of your prospective customer, they will be able to pinpoint what their challenges are. Now, let me clarify challenges or problems. They may not, on their own, know the root of the problem. But what they do know is they know the result. They know the result. So they might say, Tom, our biggest problem right now is sales. We need to increase sales. And they think, okay, well, that's the problem. So then my job is to actually ask them intelligent questions around, okay, so is this a lead generation issue or a lead conversion issue? I mean, is it a challenge with actually getting good qualified leads, or is it actually converting those leads into sales? And they say, okay, well, you know, we just had a great marketing campaign. Tons of leads have come in, but our sales reps are just not following up or following through. Okay, great. So what is it? Do you feel that the sales reps don't have the tools that they need to do this? Is it an aptitude thing? Or do they have the tools, but they just don't have the motivation or the attitude or the work ethic, or they procrastinate? Is this an attitude thing? Is it aptitude or attitude? So your job as a sales professional is to be able to ask your prospective customer intelligent questions to coach them and actually guide them to pinpoint the problem. I mean, you're absolutely right, Eric. Most people don't know exactly what the root of the problem is. So for example, I'm a huge tennis fan. So if I were to say, hey, I need help with my backhand. Now, I also have a certificate in tennis coaching, but that's a whole other story. But if someone were to come to me and say, hey, Tom, I'm having trouble with my backhand. I'd say, well, what is it? Is it reception or projection? Like, are you late receiving the ball or you have trouble directing it? Well, it's directing. Okay, great. So we pinpoint what the actual problem is, but we do that by asking questions. Does it have to do with their footwork, their racket work, right? What is it? Is it judgment, right? So we break it down. Is it a psychological issue? Is it physiological? Is it technical or is it tactical? There's four different elements that we need to address here. But they don't know that. But you as the professional know that. And it's your job to ask them intelligent questions to help uncover what is the root of the problem. It's just like when you go to a doctor and you say, oh, you know, my stomach's upset. Well, if any doctor, upon simply hearing that your stomach is upset, just handed you a prescription for medication, I mean, that's a recipe for malpractice or something. I mean, they clearly didn't diagnose you. We tend to prescribe before doing an examination and a diagnosis. So what I suggest that sales professionals need to do is we first need to examine and ask intelligent questions to help us get a clear idea of what the situation is. Then diagnose what you as a professional see as the one, two, or three major problems here, and then prescribe your solution. Great doctors have been doing this for centuries or millennia. Sales professionals, true sales professionals, need to step up and start adopting that type of approach.
So the value of your presentation is not determined by what you say, it's determined by what you listen to and hear.
Exactly. It's not what you say, it's what you ask. And sometimes asking these types of questions just, boom, opens up a whole door for people, uncovers a real need and the root of the problem. I mean, how many times do sales professionals sit down with a prospect, start talking about how great they are, they put together a presentation, a proposal, send it off, and the proposal is rejected. And then the prospect comes back and says, well, you know, that's not really what we were looking for. And you go, oh, okay. Well, what the heck were they looking for? Hindsight's 20/20. What we need to do with sales professionals is to actually ask them what they're looking for well in advance. Be crystal clear about what they need, what they want, what are the desired outcomes that they're looking for. Get them involved in actually helping you put together this proposal. So it's not a proposal at all. When I submit a proposal for sales training, it's not a proposal. It's essentially a summary of what they have told me they want me to do. Based on the intelligent, thought-provoking questions that I've asked, how can someone say no to something that they have already asked you to do? So I see presentations and proposals as really co-created documents. I hope that helps.
That helps immensely. And booyah, and I agree with you 100% across the board. Anyway, we're running short on time here, but I want to ask you, obviously, you know your stuff here. How can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about you?
Yeah, thanks for that, Eric. First of all, they can visit our website at sohosalescoaching.com. So that's S-O-H-O salescoaching.com. They can also visit us on Facebook. So we have a Soho Sales Coaching Facebook page. We've got about 1,500 fans who go there because they want to get free sales tips and advice on how they can get more effective at sales professionals. As Eric, you mentioned earlier on at the outset, I've just published a book called The Soho Solution, 21 Selling Strategies for Growing Your Small Business. It's great for sales professionals and small business owners. You can pick up a copy on Amazon.com or on the SohoSolutionBook.com.
And there you go. Well, for everybody listening, I definitely recommend you go check out Tom and his material. And we didn't really mention it, Tom himself is stationed in Singapore and works throughout mostly Asia. So for those of you in North America, not going to be so easy for you to get to the man himself, but you can
certainly
get
to the website. Yeah, for those of you in North America, we also deliver online sales training.
There you go.
We offer webinars and do one-on-one coaching using Skype. So we are able to access clients around the world.
Exactly. So let me rephrase that. You won't be able to go body to body or in the same room with them, but you'll be able to do face to face with them on Skype. So definitely check them out. Tom, thanks so much for being on the show and for giving. I think it was a great new perspective, something that needs to be reinforced about and to change the paradigm of presentations, how they're being done today. So I appreciate you coming on and doing that for us.
Thanks so much, Eric. It's been a real pleasure, you know, helping sales professionals overcome that ongoing challenge of struggling with low closing ratios. I appreciate the time.
And thank you for taking the time to listen today. Now, if presentations is an issue for you or your team, then definitely check out Tom's stuff. And you can also contact us here at the Guru Selling System, and we can talk to you about our power presentation system. If you're interested, you can give us a call. Our number in the United States is 973-551-9220. And if you're outside the USA or Canada, you can send us an email at info@guruselling.com. That's info@guruselling.com. Be sure to send us your name, email address, Skype ID, and what country you're in, and we'll get back to you ASAP about setting up a time to chat. Anyway, this is Eric Lohr saying thanks again for taking the time to listen, and always remember, you've got to be a person before you can be a salesperson. Take care. Bye-bye.